What's up, everyone? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the greatest crossover in the history of comics and wrestling, your Saturday night main event.
The main event. So, Fred, how did the week go? It seems like we got a lot of downloads. We had a lot of interest. Maybe we're onto something here.
Yeah, I think we are. The people are speaking. The downloads are proving that we're not the only ones that are this lame.
Yes, we're the,
yeah, not I'm the not, only I'm, ones. I don't mean that you guys are lame. I mean, I'm lame, but it's cool. At least that's what my kids tell me.
Yeah, always. That's one of the big rules of becoming a father is you become lame.
Yes, sorry. We're not cool.
Stop being cool. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I think it went great. I think everybody has realized that there is a nice connection between comics and wrestling. The fans cross over. So we're excited to keep evolving this show into something that becomes like a nice special mix, a nice combination of what we love. Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump into the comics for this week. There was a couple of ones, and we're also going to do a two that might be a little different, but we'll talk about it when we get to it. So let's start today with Thumbs number one. Imagine someone like, say, Mark Zuckerberg creating his own army of tech-obsessed teens and directing them to take on the government. What would the fallout be? Charlie Thumbs Fellows is a member of just such an army. Born and raised by the influential Mom app, he finds himself in the center of a war. The Social Network meets Blade Runner in this big event book from the team that brought you the hit series The Few. Written by Sean Lewis and art by Hayden Sherman. I'm going to assume Hayden Sherman is also doing the color and the letters because I couldn't find a letterist or a colorist credited in the book. Published by Image. Fred, what'd you think of Thumbs?
I think Thumbs is a really well-crafted virtual reality horror story. And what I mean by that is, in the beginning of the book, it takes a look at the mind of someone that's near death, who happens to be Charlie Thumbs. Not to mention, like, it deals with, like, the society that is pretty insane and looks pretty dangerous that they live in during that time. This book gave me the feel of a movie that came out in 1984 called The Starfighter. The Last Starfighter. It has a lot of those vibes, but it also has a lot of, like, Ready Player One feel. It kind of has a little Fortnite feel to it, too, and I see a lot of Fortnite around the house here, so I can make that comparison. What do you think about this book, Andy?
Well, I really like the book, and I didn't know if I would. When this was first announced, I went back and read The Few, because I had not read that. And it was based on the fact that you and I both like Sean Lewis. We're fans of Coyotes. We're fans of Clan Killers, other things he's done. I wanted to like, and I read The Few, and I was like, okay. It didn't really grab me. So I was a little trepid when I went this. But I really liked this. This was a little different. This kind of advanced the story in a different way. Maybe it's more modern than The Few, almost. The social media part, the apps. I also like the idea of the child army. Do you think Thumbs is because he's kind of clumsy, like me?
I think it's because he uses his thumbs a lot on the controllers.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. I thought of it as like, you know, like a almost like a disparaging remark on him, like he's the clumsy one, he's all thumbs.
It's possible, yeah, that I can see that comparison. But he did make it to, like, what, the final two in this book, mm-hmm. to advance somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean that they kind of knew he was going to get shot, it seemed like, when everyone was talking, right. Like, oh yeah, thumbs.
Yeah, I think maybe like video games is what he's good at, and like life he
yeah,
sucks at.
Possibility. That makes a lot of sense.
I know a lot of people
yeah,
like that.
That's very true, very true. But yeah, I really liked it, and I found myself enjoying it. I found myself excited to see what's happening next. The whole concept of these, like, children soldiers, really. So, yeah, I like it. And I definitely want to read the next one, for sure.
Yeah, it's I'm definitely into this book. I'm definitely into, like, a lot of Sean Lewis books. Like Clan Killers is really good. This is a totally different concept for him, you know. And his books all have, like, sort of a horror vibe to it. So this one, playing with, like, virtual reality or gaming, online gaming, kind of makes you feel like, there's going to be some really good stuff to upcoming in the future issues. Mm-hmm. I did like in this part where he kind of throws some shade at like millionaires and stuff and doing things with promoting stuff like that. They were like, oh, technology should be free for everyone for advancement. But you know that they don't necessarily mean that. So I'm wondering how that's going to play out in this book, but I really like it. I kind of like the color patterns too. I haven't seen a book. It's got the Breath of Hitman heart colors, the little black and purple or pink, hot pink. I haven't seen a book that's been colored this type of way since like Shanghai Red.
I was going to bring that up.
But I'm definitely into this book. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but it should be one that you should check out. I could keep talking about this, but I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, I want to hit the art too. I mean, just the way the pink is used. It's mostly grays. It's like a cool gray, so it looks bluish, but they're grays. So like different shades of grays. And then to accent it, it's different shades of pink. Like you said, Brett the Hitman Heart. And it works. It's really cool. It's different. And it kind of gives you like, makes you think it's its own universe. Like when you're reading it, you know you're in this and you're not going to mistake it for a different comic book. You know what I mean? So I really like that.
Yeah, it's definitely like, I kind of like the interactions between Charlie and sister too, which is kind of cool. And then you have the virtual reality mom. I'm interested to find out like what caused that to happen or if we're going to get an origin story towards that. So we find out more, but, and you know, just like at the beginning where they had the secret scholarships for everyone. Everyone's like a gamer and things like that. I want to know more about the school. So this was a good first start. I'm really into this book. And I can't say enough. And I like Sean Lewis, so I know once we post this, he'll retweet it because he's always got our back. So I can't wait for him to say, yeah, I heard you guys.
Hope so. That'd be great. So pick up Thumbs number one. It's a number one, a good book to jump on. Yeah, a lot of buzz. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's in a pretty decent series. Like I noticed in small print at the top, it says part one. So it's going to be divided in two parts, at least two parts.
Right, and don't be turned off by the $4.99 price because you get, I think there's over 60 pages. So it's a lot.
Quality cover.
It's well worth it.
You know, hard stock. Yeah, heavy stock, not hard stock. So, yeah, give it a look. All right, let's move on to our next book. This next book is Fallen World number 2. The solicit for this was pretty lame. So I grabbed the solicit from Fallen World number 1 and kind of combined it with number 2. Because if I just read you 2, you wouldn't know what the hell is going on. So here we go, trying to put these two together. Okay. In the year 4002, a cyborg samurai named Ray struggles to find his mortality while the nanite-filled super soldier Bloodshot is on a mission to save the citizens of Earth. Will they work together for the greater good? All signs point to no. Oh, and did we mention there is also dinosaurs on the loose and powerful animal-human hybrid mutants? Good luck with that, Ray. Get ready for the second thrilling chapter in Valiant's explosive event series. Ray's most dangerous foe has returned. The cyborg samurai faces an impossible challenge. Can he stop his greater enemy from gaining even more power? How many more posttronic dinosaurs will have to die for Ray to save the future? Written by Dan Abnett, art by Adam Poyina, colors by Ulysses Ariola, letters by Jeff Powell, cover by Sanford Green, excuse me. And then you have variant covers by Delaine Shalevi, Nick Varega, and Diego Yampour. That's Valiant for you. There's always a lot of variants. Published by Valiant. Fallen World. So what'd you think of Fallen World?
Well, when I first read issue 2, I realized that I probably didn't read issue 1 because I was lost. Yeah. They were speaking to Bloodshot and I was like, "Wait, who's Bloodshot in this in these panels?" And then I realized that I hadn't read issue 1. So I had to read issue 1 and then I got the story. Because Valiant is all how do you say continuity? So you have to read the prior issues before, because otherwise you're going to be lost just like I was. This is a good book, man. I'm not a big fan of Dan Abnett, and Andrew knows this. A lot of his stuff is dialogue heavy, but in this book, it works really well, and especially paired with the art, because there's something about Valiant. Like, their art is always tremendous. I'm a huge fan of their art, their books. I like Ray, the character Ray. I like how this world kind of, it deals with, like, religion aspects, so I dig that too. That's why I'm a DC fan. This book and then Fallen World's kind of like, all the main characters of this world universe is in this book, and they make appearance, so that's huge too. So for a new person that may have never read Valiant, this is a good book to jump on to get an understanding of the world, the Valiant world.
Yeah, definitely. This is big on the Valiant world. I love Valiant. I'm a huge Valiant fan, and it's a great opportunity to talk about him. Let's address the elephant in the room, though. I mean, is Valiant really an indie comic? Probably not. The creators don't own any of these characters. These are Valiant characters, and there is a universe that you have to follow. But what I like about Valiant is it does have an indie feel, in the sense that it attracts so many creative writers and so many wonderful artists that it has that indie feel. It doesn't have the overbearing feel of the continuity that you get at the big two. So they're able to kind of play with it a little bit and create a little bit and use the other characters in a really interesting way. Plus, they're very diverse. So that makes me another big fan of Valiant. This story, you kind of have to know who, here's where I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's Ray or Rye. I looked in the pronunciation up, and I've never really heard anyone pronounce it, so I'm not sure. But you have to kind of know who he is, and if you know who Bloodshot is, he's based on Bloodshot. He's a future incarnation of Bloodshot. We're talking way in the future, in a very futuristic Japan that's in the sky, basically, because the ground is toxic. So Japan's in the sky. And then you kind of have to know a little bit about Bloodshot. So if you know those two guys, everyone else kind of gets explained to you pretty good, like Eternal Warrior's in it. Maybe the Forgotten Queen is in it, I'm thinking. I'm not sure. so you have a lot of that world in there. And I really enjoyed it. Going to Abnett, Fred and I have had this discussion multiple times. I really liked Dan Abnett's Aquaman. I felt it suffered at times because of events and other things kept slowing his story down, but it's the same now that he has freedom and he can write that big Game of Thrones style political with a whole bunch of working parts story. I think he's going to blow people away with it. If you like that kind of story, deep science fiction, deep fantasy, some political intrigue, like Fred said, maybe some religion, there's just a lot going on in it. And there's a lot of working parts, and I think he does a really good job of laying the table for that. So it's a little bit of a slower burn. Is that maybe what you don't like, Fred, is it's a slow burn and it takes a while to kind of...
Well, this book I'm okay with, but it seemed like his Aquaman run was a little drawn out. Like, he wanted to end the arc, but they were like, let's add two more issues to it, and he had nothing, so he had to stretch it out, that type of stuff.
Plus, then it gets interrupted by a Justice League story, gets interrupted by a Maris, just lots of stuff going on that happens at the, so he can't stick to his story. Where I believe here, he's going to be able to do what he wants to tell. And it's so far in the future, this story is set, that what's going on with the rest of the Valiant universe probably won't affect it. So he's free to continue doing what he wants to do without some interference from maybe what's going on in some of the other Valiant comics. So
It's definitely a good book. I think you might be onto something with that last panel. I know you and I spoke about we weren't sure where this character came from, but I'm sure it's going to be addressed in the next issue, and we'll get our answers.
Do you know who the Eternal Warrior is? Who Gilead is? For just some reference. Because I know you've read some Valiant.
I've read them in like one of the old trades, but I can't remember because I got so stuck on all the Elliot Rahal books that
Well, you know who Armstrong is from Archer?
Yes, yes, yes.
He's Armstrong's brother.
Okay.
So they're brothers. Armstrong is more chill and drink wine and enjoy life, where Gilead is more of a warrior. But they're
What was the Armstrong's? Man, I can't think of his partner's name.
Is it Archer? But I may be wrong.
Archer, yeah, Archer and Armstrong and Quantum Woody.
Yeah,
I actually just ordered the trade with all four of those characters in one book. I forgot what they're called.
Yeah, if you like this stuff, I would look into Forgotten Queens too, because it's pretty good, and yeah, it gives you a nice little background about these guys.
Yeah, and also with that, like, you have Teeny Howard writing that. You have Punk Mambo written by Cullen Bunn. Who else do we have?
You have Ayala is on Livewire.
Yes.
Jody Hauser is on Faith.
And isn't Tim Seeley going to be jumping on Bloodshot soon?
And Mags Vesario is starting one as well. I can't remember the name of hers off the top of my head. It's a new one. So I say it's a very diverse company. A lot of these great female writers that are just barely starting to get their beak wet on the big ones. They're finally getting some books. You know, they play major roles at Valiant, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely go check out this book and jump on that Valiant. If you have the Comixology app, check them out. There's always free stuff on there. Dive in, because you won't want to get out of the water.
So I'm going to throw in a couple of fun wrestling facts that I just think fit, because, you know, we do wrestling that have to do with this specific one a little bit. I was talking about the Eternal Warrior, and I think somewhere around 2017 they were talking about starting this movie, and they still may, and Bautista was in talks to play the Eternal Warrior. And then... do you remember that podcast that they did, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe?
Mm-hmm.
John Morrison, Johnny Impact, Johnny Mundo played the Eternal Warrior on that.
Oh, wow.
So, a little wrestling connection just for fun to throw in.
Look at you doing your research. Hercules!
Crossover!
Oh, boy. Might have to cut this out.
All right, let's see. Okay, let's move on to our last comic, Ignited number one. Welcome to the H1 universe and Ignited, Humanoid's first ever ongoing superpowered series. It's the first day back at Phoenix Academy High, but this year there's no back to school excitement in the air, as returning students and faculty are haunted by memories of last year's horrific attack. So many friends and colleagues were lost, and some of those who survived underwent changes. They ignited, gaining supernatural abilities they barely understand. Little do they know, this is just the beginning. Written by Mark Waid and Kwanza Asouf. Art by Phil Briones. Colorist Andrew Crossley. Lettered by A Larger World Studio. I hadn't heard that one. That's a new studio. Covers number A were Mike McCone and colored by Leonardo Paciorotti. And cover B is John Cassidy and colored by Paul Mounts. And again, published by H1, a new publishing community. Or it's self-published, I guess, is the way it's found. So, Ignite. Fred, what'd you think of Ignite?
Well, I liked Ignite a lot. It's very, how would I say this? Socially relevant. It deals with a lot of issues happening in society today. It may turn off some people because of that, especially due to Mark Waid's political thinking. Some people might be turned off by that, but I am not one of them. So, with that being said, one other thing. This book may... Did I say it may make people feel uncomfortable?
Yeah, you kind of did. You hinted at least.
Okay, because... this book deals with, it kind of focuses on, like, the impact of a mass shooting that takes place in a school. In the beginning of the book, you get this kind of, like, Rush Limbaugh figure that's talking about how these people have, the left has made, like, this hoax and got these crisis actors. It sounds very relevant to what happened in Florida. And he's trying to pitch you a book to make money off his thinking. So, you know, so this book to me, I really enjoy this book. I'm not turned off by its politics. I would compare it to like the hype that Border Town got, but this one is done more tastefully. I think that it's really done well. The artwork in this book is really good. The characters, it surprised me that Mark Wade had written this book because of the teenagers in this book, how they are written, because he doesn't necessarily write teenagers very well since maybe what, the 80s?
Yeah.
So what do you think about this, Andrew?
Yeah, that's funny. The same thing I thought about, that his Champions teenagers were a little hokey, but yeah, I mean, the political stuff is going to hit you up front because the setting is a school shooting and that's a very polarizing topic. But I don't think it's going to be a topic that necessarily threads throughout this series. I think it's a setup. And I think what it is that trauma of sort is what ignites whatever, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, the mutant gene within these people, within these students, these young adults, to become superpowered beings. So I think as it progresses, we maybe will get away from some of that. So I'm just going to kind of roll with that and not let that be, you know, the deciding factor. Because I really liked the world. Mm-hmm. I liked the point of view of the main we're following this one female student in particular. You know, we see her when she wakes up. We see her go to school. Then we kind of see a little through her eyes, and also not through her eyes, what's happening at the school, her interactions with other students. And she thinks she can figure out this little mystery that's going on already. And she's kind of the first one that discovers a powered being, in essence. So I like the way that's done, and I really am excited to see where this goes. I like world building, and I like the thought of another way to tell. Like, did you watch Heroes? Do you remember Heroes on...
Yeah, I did. I watched the first season.
Yeah, so like that, there's these beings and they're super beings, and as they're discovered, or like I was telling you, Rising Stars was a comic I really enjoyed when I was younger. There was a series. It was about this group of kids that all grew up together in this town. They all had powers. And, you know, I like that kind of thing. And I'm just real excited to see where it goes. And I thought it was well written. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was drawn very well. Yeah. Pretty excited.
Yeah, it's like I mentioned, I'm really surprised that it was a Mark Wade book because it was so well written that when I first read it, I went through it. It just flowed panel to panel. Like I could not put it down. I couldn't get sidetracked. Nothing. Whether it was the art or the story, it was so well done. You know, the trauma in the beginning of the shooting, and what was it, like a year later, all the kids are going back to school. Mm-hmm. Like, the storytelling was so good. I was surprised.
Well, and there is another writer, and maybe that's what it is. He's co-writing this with somebody. So yeah. I have not really read anything from the other writer. And, what else did he write? I had something else he wrote, and I apologize, I forgot. But his influence might be the influence that's kind of maybe changing from a full Wade comic, which you didn't necessarily like, to, you know, this combination that works really well.
Yeah, and I like how at the back of this book, it shows like the team all sitting together. It's kind of like all the rumors we see on Twitter where Bendis is meeting Fraction, all these guys sitting around, but this is actually just one group.
Mm-hmm.
I have the feeling that that's how Christopher Sabella writes too, because if you go to Crowded, like they're all on the same wavelength. That maybe that's why I like this book so well, because they all are together, not in different cities or countries. They're all meeting together and just getting on the same page. Yeah, this is definitely a book that you should go get. H1, I think this is the first book of the whole universe, right?
Yes. Uh huh. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if it's just going to be this one book or if this is just a flagship book and then maybe some other writers come on and they do a solo series of a character that we are introduced to. You know what I mean? So it kind of keeps – it grows and branches out the way you know, the way Valiant has, which has been around much longer. But something that hasn't been around as long is at Lionforge, their universe, That's a relatively new universe, and how that's branched out and become a bigger
universe. And that universe is going to be doing really well, because third, what is it? They have a main event that's going to happen, like a crossover event with everything. And Gail Simone's in charge of that, and I think that should be kicking off real soon, because I keep looking in my DCBS when I need to start ordering their stuff, so we can talk about it.
She's been real quiet on Twitter. That means she must be working hard. So, yeah, it's probably soon. So,
or she's working on a Birds of Prey book.
Yeah, she's working on something. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, that's kind of our comics for this week. If you have any questions or comments to send our way to our Twitter page at Indie Alley on Twitter. Like, if you think Valiant, like I believe, falls kind of in the indie category, or if you're like, nah, that's mainstream, you guys are copping out. But that's a major publisher and you guys are copping out on that one. Just curious, thoughts, what everyone thinks. And if you read any of these books, how you felt about them, give us a tweet. Tell us what you thought. So, I think we're going to go into the wrestling now. So, comic heads, prepare to wrestle. All right, so we're back and we're ready to talk wrestling. This week in wrestling, what were your three favorite matches this week?
I guess I'll go first. So, should I start at the bottom?
No, however you'd like. Yeah, if you want, to go like from worst to best, or not worst to best, but from third. Yeah,
that sounds good. It's not the worst match, but it's like my third favorite match was the NXT UK. How do you say his name? Dragunov.
Okay. What's his name? I don't know.
How do you say it?
I think his name's Ilya Dragunov.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, versus Joseph Connors. I liked it a lot, but it wasn't like my type of style of match. But I found it very interesting. It was something different.
Were they shooters, or were they more like traditional grappling? What was it like? Because I haven't seen that one.
It was like a strong style match, but it was also like fast paced for UK. Oh, okay,
cool. I haven't seen NXT UK in a while. That's one I've neglected. Awesome. What was your next one?
My second favorite match was a AAA match. That was Kiera Chica and Tormenta. Oh, Chica Tormenta and Monster Clown versus Golden Magic, Fabi Apake, and Drago.
Okay, you said Chica. Was there a woman in this match?
It was, everywhere except for the big name WWE company, they do throw women in the guys' matches.
Okay.
Yeah, so what was it? Two women?
Two women and Monster Clown versus two guys and one girl.
Oh, sweet. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, my attention dragged to it because Monster Clown is one of the guys that was in the tag team matches a lot there with, what's his partner? Murder Clown. They got a thing with clowns over there. But, and then Drago, which I dragged from him from Lucha Underground to Impact to AAA. And that was like a name that wanted me to go there. And one of the girls had kept getting into a fight with the referee. So the referee kept getting involved and she did all types of moves on him and stuff. Like Hurricane Ranas and stuff on the ref.
Oh, nice. Nice. So there's no DQ. Yeah. They just kind of can go wild.
Nope. Okay. And
what was her name? Fabi Apache?
Yeah. Well, it's a lucha rule, so they don't do tags, really. If your partner gets knocked down or rolls out of the ring, one of your teammates gets to just run in. That's it. It keeps it fast-paced so that everybody pays attention.
Gotcha. So for people listening, you guys can catch AAA on YouTube or Twitch. We just found out Twitch does it in English, right? You were saying that, Fred? Mm-hmm. So for people, but come on, you got to do it in Spanish at least once. Immerse yourself.
Yeah, you have to experience the culture.
It's, It's like listening to a wild soccer match. I mean, the announcers are so excited. It's like the way the announcer is when they score a goal, but through the whole match.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what was your third match?
My favorite match of the week was Kota Ibushi versus Tetsuya Naito.
Good one.
Yeah. It was an off and on match, but what kept my attention was that it was just surprising how many times they got dropped on their head.
Oh, yeah.
Like, where he suplexed him on the hardest part of the ring, the edge of the apron, and Kota's head just, like, bounced off of it.
Yep. I DM'd your dad and said they killed him. I literally said that to him. I go, I think they killed him.
I don't know what was worth, Goldberg's head or Ibushi's head. They were both pretty violent.
Ibushi got dropped on his head at least 3 times in that match. And Naito got dropped like twice. They just kept hitting each other.
Yeah. I got worked on that. Or maybe I wasn't worked, in the sense that after that hit, I really started worrying about the guy's life. And I was like really like on the edge of my seat, just really staring intently at the screen like, wow, is he really hurt? Is he really hurt? Either they fooled me and he was hurt and they kept on rolling, or they tricked me. I don't know which, but it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how he wasn't hurt, because it was pretty violent. It was almost like, you know, like if you saw the Goldberg Undertaker, where Goldberg forgot to tuck his head and protect himself. It was like New Japan wrestlers were like, hold my beer, we'll one-up you. Because this one looked like he'd snapped his neck, like, violently. It was, wow.
Yeah, his eyes were glazed, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
If he wasn't, like, trained like that, I'm pretty sure he would have just gave up right there and just laid there. Somebody had to be called out.
He took a bunch more bumps after that, too. It's not like they just slowed it down after that.
Nope. They were like, oh, that got their attention. Let's just keep doing that. Drop him on his head a couple more times.
That was a good match. I'll talk about that one a little more when we do the New Japan thing. So, Fred, what were your matches of the week?
My third match of the week would have to be from AAA. Would be Dr. Wagner Jr. and Pagano versus Blue Demon Jr. Or is it Blue Demon Jr.?
Yeah, it's Jr.
And Tejano Jr. That was like an old school, kind of like a WWE hardcore match. Like, they used all types of things, and Wagner was kind of bloodied and stuff. They used broomsticks, wood, all types of things. You know, over the years, Dr. Wagner's kind of reinvented himself to continue to wrestle. So this is like his new way, especially since losing his mask. So he wasn't, you know, he was the first one to get bloody. It's a good match, man. If you guys watch AAA, it's kind of like a soccer atmosphere with the crowd, or like a kind of circus atmosphere, because you have like the high flying stuff, the crowd is pumped, you know, it's a totally different contrast than, say, New Japan, where they just sit there and clap. And, you know, in Mexico, everybody's into it. It's the life of the party.
Yeah, I haven't quite found my way on that yet.
AAA, like, it's a lot different, because they got like an addiction to clowns and belts. Like, they whip out the belt a bunch of times and like through the whole show. And they're not like the small belts. They're like the thick ones that Hulk Hogan would wear in like the NWO.
Yeah, it's so colorful. I watched that particular match that you were talking about, Fred. So I did see part of that. So where did Dr. Wagner, where was he before WCW? Is that where Americans might know him?
I don't know.
I think it was Underground where they would know him.
Maybe Lucha Underground. But I think predominantly he was in like AAA almost his whole career. I don't remember.
Yeah, but as a non-Luchador fan, I remember the name. That's why I wonder if it was WCW.
Yeah, he's kind of like a legend, just like Blue Demon or
El Santo.
Yeah, El Santo, guys like that. He's been around a long time. I remember him wrestling when I was a kid, and let's just say I'm no longer a kid.
Kid at heart.
So, my second favorite match would have to be in MLW. It was Davey Boy Smith Jr. versus MJF and the Dynasty. because I'm saying End of Dynasty because it was like Four Horsemen style tactics against Davey Boy Smith Jr. I mean, it wasn't a great match per se to watch, like in ring, but the things, the heel work that, you know, the Dynasty did with MJF to kind of play with Davey Boy Smith Jr.'s head was outstanding. I think, like, tossing a t-shirt in there so they could choke him out, keep the ref moving, you know, go back and forth. MJF sliding out as soon as the bell rings out of the and walking away, just mind games the whole time. But at the very end, you know, Brian Pillman Jr. and Teddy Hart came down and kind of helped out, and the good guy prevails in this match. So it was great storytelling the whole time.
Even the odds. I saw that one. Yeah, I was a big fan of that, of course, the same as you said. Told a good story. MJF kind of concentrated on the leg to bring the big man down, so take away his power. And is that valet new? Because I've never seen her, but I haven't been watching MLW as long as you guys.
I think, I mean, relatively new, probably so, like, within the last year. But, I think they're just building the Dynasty bigger and stuff, you know. It has that feel, like, the faction of, like, the horsemen.
Yeah, like exactly, like the horsemen, and, like, they've added a, you know, kind of like, almost, what's his name, like, Shane Douglas had with, was it Francine that he had with, or Beulah that he had with him? I can't remember. It's been so long. Beulah. Francine was with Tommy Dreamer, right?
I think they were all passed around.
Okay. All right. PG show.
Right. And then my number one match would have to be from Dominion, New Japan. Of course, you guys are going to hear it week in, week out. I'm a huge fan of Will Ospreay. But not only him, but Dragon Lee from AAA is outstanding. Both of those guys are acrobatic, great workers. There was, like, so much back and forth. It was kind of like an NXT. If you're a fan of NXT, it had that feel, like, move for move, going after each other. I'm just a big fan of both those guys, and that was a great match. Ospreay won the belt. I hope that he moves up to heavyweight soon because he's put on a lot of weight, and he might be like the new Kenny Omega in Japan.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I tried to stay away from the New Japan ones because I'm going to talk New Japan a lot when we hit that, because we're going to talk about my first experience with real New Japan wrestling. So my first one, I'm going to go with Ace Austin and Airwolf, and it's an MLW match. I thought it was just kind of cool. I like Ace Austin. He's got like a X-Men Gambit thing going on with the cards and the staff and the trench coat kind of thing. That was kind of cool. And he's very acrobatic young guy. They're both young wrestlers, guys. And then Airwolf we talked about a little bit last week. He's Rey Mysterio's cousin, correct? And I just like his acrobatic lucha style. I feel like they're positioning him for some big things. The announcers made some commentary about, you know, that Promociones is looking at him, that Selena De La Renta is looking at him. So maybe they're going to make him a part of that faction, and he's going to get a little push. So that was quite – it was just a solid acrobatic match. Told a good story. I was happy with the winner.
I have a question. When he came down to the ring, did you hear that they played the Airwolf theme music?
The only reason I heard is because you had told me the day before or something. So I was looking for it. But I wouldn't have probably noticed if you hadn't said that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cheesy, but kind of funny.
Because we found out last night I had watched the wrong one. I had watched the pay-per-view and I hadn't watched the episode. So I almost really blew it. So no, I didn't watch the episode until after. Yeah. And that's funny because my next match is going to be the one from the pay-per-view. They had a small pay-per-view in MLW, and it was Pillman Jr. from the Hart Foundation versus Alex Hammerstone from the Dynasty. Like you, I like this Hart Foundation Dynasty thing, the heel team, the good guy team. I told you this match felt like throwback WCW in a good way. You know, you have one guy with the blonde mullet jumping around doing acrobatic stuff, then you have the other guy that's more of like the bodybuilder type, strong and powerful, and tossing Cornette doing commentary, and I just felt like I went back in a time capsule and I was watching a good WCW match. There was no interference from either the Foundation or the Dynasty. Mm. So Hammerstone went over clean, and this was for a new belt. So Hammerstone is a new champion. He's holding a belt.
Yeah, it's the first belt that this Major League Wrestling's had.
Right? So that's pretty cool. So, you know, it's obviously they're putting him over, and they also think Pillman's important enough to be part of that match.
Right, and where did you watch this at? On YouTube?
On YouTube.
Okay.
And since they come out a week earlier on YouTube than they do on Fight, I thought I was watching the episode. But the reality is I was just watching a pay-per-view. And what it is I think they put them out live. They're live on BN Sports. And then within a few hours of that, they go up on YouTube. And a week later or a few days later, they go to Fight. It's confusing.
3 or 4 days later, it's on Fight. I think it comes on Tuesday nights on Fight because Ring of Honor comes on Monday night.
So to make this non-complicated, we're going to do the one that's on Fight, the newest one. So if people are curious, I messed myself up. So,
I don't blame you. That's like a good match, and you were talking about it for a while. You were like, oh, I'm going to go check out Brian Pillman Jr. and Hammerstone's match because it's going to be good. And then when you kept talking about it and I mentioned what we watched on episode 60, you were like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
You said, oh, I got more wrestling to watch.
Yeah. And they built to that one because Pillman beat – who did Pillman beat? Had some lead-up matches
beat Swan.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and then Hammerstone beat somebody. So there were some lead-up matches that kind of led to this. So that's why I was already I needed to know the conclusion. So I definitely was looking for it. All right, now my final match, I'm going to go with a women's match. I'm going to go with Jordynne Grace and Madison Rayne on last night's Impact show. Every time I see Jordynne Grace, I'm amazed again. Those one-handed standing, is that a suplex? What she does where she holds... Those are just amazing. And then talking about somebody taking a bump on that hard part of the apron, the outside part. Ooh, Madison Rayne slipped. She botched somehow. And she fell on her butt and she was out of it. She kept going through that match, but she was seeing stars. Her eyes were completely glazed over. She dumped off the whole apron onto the floor and hit her head. And they continued, and it was a good, solid match. They traded a lot of moves. They traded a lot of holds. This wasn't a quick, let's do this and let's be done. And what made it interesting also is you have Kira Hogan did commentary, and it's obvious that they're setting up a Jordynne Grace Kira Hogan feud to come in the future. So the whole thing was enjoyable. I've said this before. I think I said they were one of the best last time, but I'm going to say they are the best women's division in wrestling. After what I saw they did on Raw and SmackDown this week, they may have more talent on WWE, but they are not using them. So there's three storylines going on in Impact, and they're really pushing the women's division. And yeah, stars to be made.
Especially like with women just fighting men, Tessa Blanchard's in that wrestling, and she's undefeated against the dudes.
Yeah.
She's squashing guys.
I mean, you made the joke last week that they should just focus on her, and it's almost like they listen to you. She's the main event. She's in a feud with Sammy Callahan and his boys.
Yep. she took out two of those OVE guys, 2 weeks ago, and they keep teasing it. I'm interested, in just Impact itself, because they have that pay-per-view coming up that's going to be pretty decent. I'm glad that last night's episode... The North one and Sabu and RBD, so that they'll be in the title match, not those guys.
Yeah, but they're doing an RBD versus what's his name, the big guy that was not in the match. I can't remember his name right now.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, Moose.
Yeah, Moose.
Yeah.
So that's on there, and I just got this feeling we're just days away from seeing Rhino debut, because I know he's done with his WCW or his WWE contract. I mean, it's like they're doing the entire ECW reunion on this show, and I don't know. I'm not against that, but I don't want to see them every week. I just feel like the men's division is lacking. on Impact. That would be my thing. The women's division is better.
Yeah, that one. And like, let's talk about a little bit about Ring of Honor. It's kind of, we didn't mention any matches this week from Ring of Honor because it was kind of boring. The only good match I felt that was decent was when the Briscoes came out after James Storm and Colt Cabana fought each other, and they kind of, you know, beat up both guys. They kind of did their little outsiders thing, calling out each person. I thought that was pretty cool. But other than that, it was kind of slow week for them. I am interested in their pay-per-view coming up, Best in the World, where they have, only because they have a couple of AAA guys like Bandido and Dragon Lee are showcased in that pay-per-view, and also Jeff Cobb versus Matt Taven. I think that if you want to make Ring of Honor a better product, then you got to put the belt on Jeff Cobb.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. They need to do something. I made that joke with you earlier that the Briscoes are in feuds with people that aren't even in Ring of Honor. You know, they're fighting with G.O.D. They're fighting with now these N.W.A. guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like watching their weekly show is worth it. Almost, I'll just show up for the pay-per-views. That's when they bring some talent in. You know.
But it's mainly from other organizations.
Yeah, but at least I get something, you know.
Right, because that way that, you know, they can help showcase them, like the G1. Where they had a few guys against them from New Japan that kind of helped get some of these guys a little over.
Yeah, I agree. So, and that's, yeah, I think some of these guys are going to be in the next New Japan pay-per-view, if I looked closely.
And speaking of New Japan pay-per-view, how was your second experience of watching New Japan?
Well, you know, it's funny, you say second, but I still feel like it's a first, because my first true New Japan experience was the super card that we had at WrestleMania weekend. Mm-hmm. And that's not all New Japan. That was Ring of Honor. It was Ring of Honor announcers. It seems like Ring of Honor went over a lot more in matches. And so I didn't get that same experience I got as what I watched last week. Last week was like a whole new experience, man. It was like discovering, you know, Deadly Class as a comic book reader and realizing there's something cool out there just besides Batman and Superman, you know, and just like, whoa, what is this? I mean, the speed, the realism that it has. And what I mean realism, yes, wrestling's not real, but they treat it like an athletic event, and there's not a lot of promo in between per se. You know, they come out and there's matches and they fight. But at the same time, there's a bit of theater. Mm-hmm. Like, you could tell with their faces. I don't understand. Like, the match that Joey picked was my favorite match because I knew nothing about these guys. I had no influence about, like, you know, this is Moxley, this is Jericho, this is whatever. I didn't know anything, and I remember texting you, like, well, who's the heel? Because I couldn't even figure out who the heel was at first. But as the match went on, I just, like, through their facial expressions, through the way they worked, I just fell in love with it. It was like anime come to life. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely like a different style wrestling. It's more strong style. But you're right. They do focus on athletic ability and not just... What I like is that it's not just a lot of hype. It's just two guys doing their best over 30 to 60 minutes, giving the people what they want. Because that's how long they wrestle for. Literally, some of these guys with a 60-minute time limit, and they give it their all, the whole 60.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think, Joey, of the whole thing? I mean, what's your...
The New Japan show?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there was a lot, but there was a lot of long matches, but they were good matches. It wasn't like they just threw away, like, a half hour of a match. The style of wrestling, like... They got the strong style guys, they got the fast paced guys, they got the in the middle guys.
They bring in the American brawler, like Moxley or some, you know, he's just there to brawl.
I
described it as it was like a good record album, and I didn't necessarily like all the songs, but all the songs fit, and they just kept on rolling through the whole thing. It was such a well put together show that I just enjoyed it from start to finish. And there was a couple, and I don't know, maybe I don't like them as much because I don't know the backstory on some of these guys, the guys that are just straight New Japan. So I don't understand the feuds yet. I don't understand so much why it was a big deal that the guy at the end, I can't remember his name, got involved with the Jericho-Okada match and came to the aid of Okada. I mean, I'm sure that that's a big deal to people who've watched this.
Who was that? Tanahashi?
Tanahashi. Right.
So, like, are they, are him and Okada not friends? Are him and Jericho not friends? I mean, there's, so I don't know some of that. So those are little things that I don't know yet, but.
Yeah. That's, if you're like a WWE person, there's guys that have came from New Japan. Like, Shinsuke was like one of their biggest people. And if you're an NXT or 205 Live person, Hideo Itami just returned to New Japan.
Yes. I forgot about that. That was cool.
What's his name in Japan?
Kenta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good time. I enjoyed the matches. I'm a huge G.O.D. fan. I just am. They're one of my favorites. You want to sell me on a pay-per-view, put them on it. I just kind of like them. That's one of those weird things where you like their performance. They make me laugh. They think they're cool. I like the fact that they're kind of hardcore and kind of different. I don't know. My ultimate match is to see them in the Usos, but not in a WWE ring. A place where the Usos can be the Usos and let it fly the way these guys let it fly and just see who's the best on the island. You know, that's my match.
The only thing that throws me off about them is when he talks. When Tama talks, his voice doesn't, like, fit him. It doesn't sound.
Oh, okay. You know, I see what you mean, kind that's, of.
He's kind of smaller. No. He's kind of.
Like Loki's voice doesn't fit his face.
Well, it doesn't.
He sounds like a voiceover of a karate movie.
It doesn't sound like Tama Tonga has got super kicked by puberty yet.
Oh. What are you doing? Jesus.
Bringing the Tama Tonga shade, man.
Oh. Well, he just got punked by a teenager.
Oh, but yeah, I like
barely
it.
Barely a teenager.
So whenever they're involved. The Evil and Sonata match wasn't necessarily their best. But
Who did they go against?
The Gorillas of Destiny.
Okay, yeah.
That sounds like a feud that they usually do there.
I like I like Suzuki. I wish his match was a little longer. I think his partner was Zack Sabre Jr., which I really like Sabre, and like he'll just stretch you all over the ring and do all these moves that I'm like, oh wow. And he's not a big dude, like physically. He's kind of skinny and stuff, but his moves are unreal. I'd like to see him one day wrestle Daniel Bryan.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, that was the match I said I had the mean old man.
Yeah.
That guy was mean.
Yeah, he punched that one dude with a forearm, just like broke his jaw basically.
Yeah.
Didn't Sonata tie up one of the gorillas?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's like, I can't admit, I tried it on myself. Tying myself up like that. I don't understand how he did that. It doesn't work like you think it does.
Okay. Why would you tie yourself up?
No, like, you gotta, like,
what kind of freaky stuff is that? You need to leave your bedroom door open.
You gotta, like, cross your legs up and. It's.
Oh boy.
We're gonna need therapy after this one.
No more wrestling for you.
Yeah. Who ties themselves up? Are you Houdini?
Oh, man.
Come on.
All right. Well, that kind of covers the... I mean, we didn't talk about the Jericho Okada. That one was my least favorite, to be honest. I didn't really get into that. Maybe you guys have other insight. I wasn't into seeing that one too much.
I don't think Jericho's in physical shape to be wrestling like that close to each other. But I did like his heel work at the end where he, like, took the Okada money and shoved it in his pants and wiped it on his nuts and put it on the camera. That was kind of cool. And, you know, he was just playing, you know, strictly heel stuff, I think. I don't know. I think he might have been hurt a little bit from the last AEW show. Who knows? Because his body isn't used to being, you know, nightly WWE shape. Mm-hmm. He's 48 years old. I mean,
yeah. No, I thought he did really well. It just, I don't know. It just, maybe because I told you I just saw him recently in a back-to-back Jericho. Seeing Jericho at this age just doesn't keep its hype, you know. It's better he only wrestles once in a while.
Yeah, and only, like, big matches. Like, I think if in AEW, I would maybe, like, twice a year or three times a year. That's all you need him for.
Yeah.
I mean, he's more of a ticket draw just for certain matches, but I don't know how much he has left in his tank for him to continue to.
So then you don't think they keep put the belt on him, is what you're saying? You don't think he wins this first? He's their first champion.
I think he could. I think they might put it on him. I'd personally
not have him fight. Maybe
personally, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Put the belt on the Painmaker.
I would, no, we're talking about AEW. I would put it right on Adam Page first.
You think so? To open the shows? I mean, just saying Jericho's your champion might draw in some, you know, casuals. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know. Because, I mean, the people, might, you know, because AEW has a big following, fan base. Mm-hmm. Like, how quick did they sell out All In?
Yeah.
True. They sold it out, like, relatively
minutes.
Yeah, relatively quickly. So that tells you the following that they have. They're going to draw no matter what. Like, mm-hmm. This month's show in 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
Is, you know, it's going to be free. So that's going to bring in some more fans, especially like those video gamer mm-hmm. fans that are going to happen to be at that place. That's mm-hmm. maybe why they're doing it. But I think it's more so to focus on the mid-card talent to get them mm-hmm. over yeah. to... so people can see what they can do, because yeah. like for like myself or Joey, we've seen these guys wrestle for quite a long time that we know what they can do, but like the average, you know, the people that might not, like, say like yourself hasn't watched them as long as us. So mm-hmm. this is a way for them to show you what they have.
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, as bad as Raw's doing, they're still pulling in 2 million.
Yeah,
2 million is a lot of people.
That just shows you like the loyalty of wrestling fans. It's kind of like, as much as I don't listen to country music, it's that's like all those fans there are so yeah. loyal to those musicians. That's a mm-hmm. wrestling fan.
Because I've heard like a great opening for AEW when they start TV would be just over 1 million. If they do just over 1 million. That it shows that show has a real chance to survive.
When is Skrull's Ring of Honor contract up?
That I don't know. I'm not deep into the dirt sheets mm-hmm. as other people are. So I don't know. But there was some good news. I mean, they signed Spears. Spears is officially AEW.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfect 10.
Okay.
You just choked on your...
Yes, I did. We know that Moxley and Omega are going to be the main event, probably, of
mm-hmm.
that, All Out.
That should be pretty good. Although, I'm wondering how, like, their styles can... Like, how they're going to blend together. Because one guy is kind of like an artist in the ring. And the other guy just wants to whoop the crap out of you.
Yeah, one's a brawler. I'm trying to think of people that... Because Dean, I know I've watched more Dean matches, so I'm trying to think what type of acrobatic wrestler Dean has gone against successfully, and nothing's coming to my mind.
Rollins?
Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins probably.
You think so?
The most.
But I think Rollins may have brawled more in the matches.
Yeah, he's a better fighter than Omega.
Yeah. Because Rollins can go that in between. He can brawl, or he could go... acrobatic, yeah.
What you
know.
The most acrobatic thing you're gonna get out of Moxley is probably a suicide dive, but yeah. Omega, like it's kind of confusing on how they're gonna do that.
A lot of kicks.
Yeah.
Probably Omega will do a lot of kicks. like you said, a bunch of dives. I still don't know who's going to win this. I really don't. I mean, a lot of people are assuming Omega because of his, you know, Omega's one of the greatest and this and that. But again, I'll go back to that whole thing. Who do you want to have as like your showcase as you go into television with the casual fan? And people know who Dean is.
Yeah, I think me, I would say Dean wins.
Yeah.
Because that's like a kick in the face to WWE. Mm-hmm. Like, look how we book him compared to how you booked him.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Very cool. I'm just interested to see who else they bring on contract-wise. I'm really interested to see in the pay-per-view at the end of this month because I want to see like Jungle Boy and a couple other guys like show people what they can do.
Yeah, I agree. And oh, Jungle Boy's going to be, what was that pay-per-view you sent me that has all those guys in?
I think PWG.
Yeah, there's some killer matches there. There's like people from all over the place.
Yeah, that's another good one to check out. Like if you want to get into indie and stuff, it takes guys from Impact all over the place. I think, what did it have, like the Rascals versus LAX? It had
MJF is in that.
Uh-huh.
Gosh, it just had, there was a lot. I can't remember everything after me, but yeah. I saw a lot of names. Who was Jungle Boy going against? He was going against somebody pretty good too.
I can't remember, but you know who his dad is, right?
Yeah, yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. So for listeners, Luke Perry,
the actor
who just passed away recently. That's a true indie show, of course, and that's why when people say, "Well, you know, AEW and all these Impact are not indie," I say, "Well, they kind of are because these wrestlers are given the ability to perform other places at times."
Mm-hmm.
You don't see WWE guys getting to do that. You know, Kofi's not on this thing. You know, and Finn Balor doesn't get to go do something different. It's pretty much, this is what it is. I mean, the best you can hope for is, I guess, sent down to NXT and do some real wrestling down there like Tyler Breeze is doing. And I guess Fandango is doing now. And one of Insanity's now on NXT too.
Wolf?
Well, both of them are. Killian Dane is in NXT, and then I think Alexander Wolf is in NXT UK.
So we know they have a backlog of talent that is just banging on the doors to push forward that isn't even on TV yet. And they're bringing guys down from the main roster.
And most of the talent on NXT UK is also in Progress Wrestling in England, which is really good too if you want to check that stuff out. Like, they recently just had a tournament with like Kyle O'Reilly and a bunch of other guys were in it. It was pretty good. You can get that on the Fight TV app too, pay-per-view.
Nice.
Also the New Japan that we keep talking about, you can get for like $9.99 a month. You can stream it.
Yeah, and don't be scared if you don't understand what it says. There is a little button up top to translate it to English.
And they have English commentary if you'd like.
Yes. Yes, they do. They do have English commentary. But where I was going with that NXT thing is there was an article I read before our show about there's a lot of NXT people that have inquired about getting out of their contract. Their development deals. Guys that haven't even got on TV yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're realizing there's such a backlog. There's 1 hour of TV a week. It's so hard to get onto the takeover. And then when you go up to the main roster, they've watched what's happened to Ricochet. That's what the article said. And they're all kind of like, do we really want to go this route?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to treat us right? Maybe we need to jump ship.
To me, it's like a DC writer or a Marvel writer leaving to do his own creator-owned books. And he has the freedom of not an editor or the company breathing down his neck, and he can do what he wants. And I feel like that's what the wrestlers feel too, because they don't have a Vince McMahon telling them, well, you have to dress like this and here's your script, read it word for word. You actually can say, you know, what you want to say. I mean, as long as it gets you over.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, there's bullet points, and then you know the rest is up to you. As Moxley said in one of his interviews, if you can't cut a promo, maybe you don't belong at this level, kind of thing. Yep. The Bucks have their last independent match coming up as well, they announced. So their actual last true independent match where they become full AEW employees, I guess. So maybe we won't even see them in Japan or anywhere.
Unless they sign a contract. I'm hoping that AEW and New Japan work out a deal, and New Japan tells Ring of Honor to bounce because they need to. If they do that, WWE better look out.
Those are probably like the top two companies that aren't like the biggest, like everybody knows who it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's waiting, because AEW's already locked up AAA. They already have a working deal together.
Yeah.
So AAA, if they get New Japan.
AAA's going to like get their cruiserweight division, but like in their middle matches, but like New Japan would help with their main event matches. You can take those guys, like, I don't think they'll let you take Okada because that's like their crutch in Japan. But, like, they'll give you guys, like, Kota Ibushi to start off a rivalry or something over there.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some of the Bullet Club guys.
Yeah, like Jay White. They might have the Elite versus the new Bullet Club, the firing squad.
It's going to be exciting. That's the biggest thing. I think this is the time to get into wrestling. Joey doesn't remember the days of the wars and how fun it was to know who was going to jump ship, who was going to re-sign with WCW, who was going to show up on an ECW pay-per-view, who was going to, you know, all that craziness that we went through when there was the Monday Night Wars. And it's not exactly the Monday Night Wars, but there's just an excitement of knowing there's a lot of movement and there's a lot of opportunity and you don't know who might show up where.
And the other thing that you can get to understand, like with wrestling, is when you watch some of these indie wrestling promotions, a lot of these guys have turned down contracts, and you can tell who does it for the love and who does it for the money.
Like, I'm pretty sure Kushida jumped from Japan to NXT, but was it the right decision? Like, he was pulling matches with Ospreay, like, almost at every pay-per-view, and now he's over there fighting, what, Drew Gulak from 205 Live?
Yeah.
In submission matches.
Yeah. He's not really. Yeah. And I doubt that Vince McMahon even knows who the hell he is.
He knows he's the Japanese guy that wears the Back to the Future stuff.
Yeah. Even if he knows that much, you think Vince watches NXT? He doesn't watch NXT. You know, he hears about somebody down there. Oh, I'm going to bring him up. Just by look at who he brought up in that first group. Lars, Lacey Evans. Who else was in that group? It was Nikki Cross and EC3. He brought up prototypical WWE types. He didn't look at, like, okay, who's really doing the work down there? The Tommaso Ciampas, the Aleister Blacks, the Ricochets. Those all came later in a panic mode. But that first call-up was your typical WWE. It had nothing to do with who was doing the best work down there.
Yeah,
it was a mistake. I mean, going back to the women, I know Jordynne Grace and Tessa Blanchard could have gone other places. They chose to stay at Impact. There's a reason. And Tessa, they have a lot of freedom there.
Tessa Blanchard turned down WWE. But fun fact is that she was the body double for Paige in the Paige movie.
Oh, okay.
She did all the action stuff. The Rock helped cast her as that part.
Wow, very cool. Yeah, I mean, you're telling me she wouldn't be a star? She'd be up there with Charlotte.
Yeah.
With that name, with the Blanchard, and the fact that she's has a claim to the Four Horsemen herself.
I think she made the best decision because I think that if things go sour with Impact, she can just jump ship to AEW, become a heel, and just ride it out.
Ride it out. And Impact lets her jump around, too. She's shown up on Shimmer. She has shown up on Glow. Isn't she still with Glow? I think she's with Glow still. So they let her do some things as well. So she has what she wants. And I think that's the key to going forward. WWE's model is not going to be what people want anymore, what the wrestlers want. All right. Any other news or any other Fed or something you watched this week that you want to highlight?
No, I don't think I have anything. We'll have to get, like, we're coming up on a bunch of pay-per-views, so I think we're going to fill those in upcoming shows.
Yeah.
From all these organizations. I'm interested, like, from the people that listen to us, like, what they think we should cover more about wrestling or topics. Like, send us questions so we can do some things. Like, if you said, hey, what's your favorite heel in the independents, we could do something off that, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and maybe also give people a direction where to go, because, like, I'm newer. Like, it's hard to dip your toe in sometimes into something. Like I told you, AAA for me has felt like I opened a Batman comic mid-run. And I'm like, okay, shit, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this is happening or that. I just feel a little bit overwhelmed, and it's just going to take me a few viewings before I kind of catch on to who's who and why they're doing what. Where I think New Japan, and I don't know why, I kind of really slid into it easy. I don't know why it is, but I did. And the same thing with MLW. I've been able to kind of catch the feuds, understand who's who quickly. So I give those feds a lot of, or promotions a lot of praise for making it easy for someone who hadn't watched all this stuff. Yeah. To jump in. I mean, I started MLW about maybe 4 months ago, 3 months ago, and I've just been hooked ever since.
Yeah, it's good wrestling.
Okay, well, I guess we can call it a day. Enjoy our Father's Day weekend. Did you get him a good present?
Nope.
No? Oh, man.
I'm just shaking my head, so that's why I'm not saying anything.
Nothing.
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at Indie Alley. You can find me on Twitter at Comics Fred. Andrew, where can they find you?
They can find me at Real Comics, R-E-E-L Comics.
You can find Joe on here next week. He doesn't get social media. He's a kid.
No.
He's Junior. Since he likes AAA so much, you're going to call him Junior.
What?
El hijo del
nerdo.
Del nerdo. But he could also be El Nerdo Junior, because they do use Junior a lot.
Yeah,
AAA.
That's for you, Rico.
All right, guys. We'll catch everyone next week. Have a good one.
Peace. Bye.